Good evening. I'm going to talk for just a few minutes about Vespers 86, and then at 7:30 we're going to, that will be our evening Vespers, just to give some context to it. In August of 1985, my wife Linda and our two children, Katrina and Matthew, and I came to Holden to spend the winter from August 85 until June of 86. And how many of you have been here in the winter? Okay, good. So you have some idea. I saw in one of the statistics that they had 50 inches above normal this past winter. So any of you who are here know that you get 9 feet of snow in the winter we were here at once on the ground, and it's dark, very dark, and the community gets small, and sometimes, especially during avalanche danger, there aren't a lot of things to do because you can't leave the village. And so the one constant every day, well, two constants, community meetings and and evening Vespers. And we would meet in Koinonia because it was a much smaller space and we didn't need this place. Tonight, I mentioned earlier that a lot of the music that we're going to do a concert later on, and at least two of the pieces were written here, and I'll talk about that when we do them. It's a good place to write when you have nothing else to do. And they take this beautiful piano and shove it, at least when I was here, they shoved it in that room and you could sit in there in the quiet. So quiet you could hear the snowfall and look out at this beautiful scene. The community was very passionate about worship, and that's about the only thing I can say about their attitudes about worship, because they were all over the map, which is one of Holden's gifts. They had strong feelings about a lot of things. One of the things we used on a regular basis was Vespers, or evening prayer, from the LBW. And for various reasons, different people weren't satisfied with that. And so they asked me if I would write an evening prayer for that community. The year before, Tosh Jordan, who was a cook, had written something called Matins 85. Long-term staff, do they still sing that from time to time? I don't know. Off and on. He wrote it and named it Matins 85 because he said, as the culture and the world changes, music should drop away. So he thought 1985, he'll date it. That is why Vespers became Vespers 86, because I assumed that in 87 somebody else would write another Vespers. So that's the way it was at Holden. You can look in the cabinets and find just tons of music written while people were here. And so I would write pieces of it, and we would try them out at Vespers. And since there was 9 feet of snow and it was very dark, there was nothing to do after Vespers except sit around and critique Vespers. So you had a congregation that, you know, that stayed and let you know what they thought. And I say that because this really was written by the community. I get the royalties, but they did help write it. And one of the interesting things is agreement was made with GIA and Holden that this is the only place that sells Vespers 86, and the proceeds go to Holden. Everywhere else, it's Holden evening prayer. But some of the issues that came up were language, especially around words like Lord and Father and Christ. And so it was a challenge because in these conversations, people would say certain things they really wanted and didn't want, and somebody else would say the opposite. But I believe, and I firmly believe, that the reason this has survived is at least partly due to the fact that this community prayed it over months, and it was rewritten and rewritten. Somewhere in Holden are earlier drafts. I don't know where they are, but I'm sure they're somewhere, and you can see what it went through. I'll just give you a couple examples. In the opening hymn, you don't have to look, you'll see the word gentle justice, and I was asked to put that in because the theme of the following summer was gentle justice. So things went in there not necessarily because they were the best text, but because they served a purpose. This follows the classic form of evening prayer. It begins with a service of light, and like so many things in worship, it arose for very practical reasons. You had to light the lights to see. We know about darkness from this morning, that when it gets dark, it gets dark. So you light the lights. And typically, people would stand throughout the lighting of the lights because it's praise. And the posture for praise in evening prayer is to stand. And then we would sit to hear the word and listen. And the classic evening psalm for Vespers is Psalm 141, "Let my prayer rise like incense." And I thought in my mind of incense sort of moving like this. And I also imagined two dancers with bowls of incense moving. And so that's why the canon came. We're doing a piece tonight that has a canon, and we may talk about that too. It's a wonderful way of singing. So I'm going to divide you up, but I'm not going to do it now because you won't remember until 7:30. But we'll sing it. This will be side one, and this will side two, but I'll tell you again. Another classic part of Evening Vespers is the Magnificat, Mary's song. Here's another place where the community inserted itself. Someone pointed out that this was sung by a woman, Mary, but in no place in the Magnificat does it say it's sung by a woman. And they said, you've got to get that in there. And I could not imagine saying, by the way, my name is Mary. It just doesn't work. And somebody, and I don't remember who, suggested to put the Annunciation in so that you could say an angel went from God to a town called Nazareth to a woman whose name was Mary. So we got her name in. But that is not a part of classic evening prayer. And because the whole community, me included, did not expect this to be used after the winter or beyond the community for that matter, it was created for a community. And that's the other thing that I think I find may have helped its longevity is that when I write, I try and imagine the community or know something about the community. Because if I don't, you try and write for some amorphous entity called the church, and it just sounds bland. But this community had a definite, they weren't bland. They were a lot of things, but it wasn't a bland community. If I had an hour and a half, I'd tell you some stories that would curl your hair, but... But it was a good community, but a very difficult community. At that time, Tom Witt's father, Elmer, was the director. And what?
He was the difficult one.
No. The Witts have never been difficult. There's a picture, I don't know if it's in the timeline, of Elmer dressed as Gandhi. And it was that was typical of the winter. But I don't know where that came from. After that, there are evening prayers, and in the Vespers service, unlike Eucharist, which we had last night, in which the prayers are crafted for Eucharist, in Liturgy of the Hours, they are typically set pieces. In fact, what happens in prayers like Matins and Vespers, and especially in monastic worship, is that most of the prayer is the same over and over again. And then the reading will change or the psalm will change. And the idea is that you pray into a rhythm and the rhythm takes root in you and then the reading leaps out because it's different than everything else. Like a friend of mine was in Rome and he went to a little chapel each day and it was a whitewashed chapel and really barren. And one day he went in and somebody had put a single red rose at the front. And he said, that changed everything. And Vespers are sort of like that. One of the difficult things about a Vespers like Holden Vespers, or for that matter, Holden Evening Vespers here, is that it's not the same. Holden prizes its diversity and the Vespers change all the time. And I think for the good. Holden has been a great gift to the larger church in ways. It's odd that places like Holden and Iona, which are not on the mainstream to anything, end up speaking in a powerful way to the larger world. I think it's a very fascinating phenomena. I'm not going to talk much. The prayers. It has been pointed out to me that the response, God of mercy, hold us in love, is not a good response for intercessions. It doesn't really say anything about responding to the prayers. And I've found that people who say they like Holden evening prayer have been so uncritical that I find that I have to do that. It's got its warts and its flaws. It does. And I am frankly surprised that it gets used. because it's not the best writing I did by any means. Maybe it gets used because it's very low maintenance. You can just pull it out and do it, which might make it easy. Yeah, I'll take questions if you want.
To a person or a pastor who says that the Magnificat is not appropriate for Lent.
For what? For Lent?
For Lent.
I didn't say it wasn't appropriate for Lent.
This pastor has, and I miss it.
Oh. I don't know what the pastor meant. Susan Brill and I did an evening prayer series for Lent. There's nothing specifically Lenten about this. I think the reason it gets used in Lent is many Lutheran churches have a tradition of something midweek Lent. And once again, you don't have to plan anything. You just pull it out and do it.
Well, I think one of the reasons it gets used during Lent is because it's one of the only times in the Lutheran church that we have regular evening services.
Yeah. And I mean, I think before holding evening prayer, those same churches would be creating something and doing something. I don't know. It's not particularly Lenten.
I know, but they do it without the Magnificat, which takes the guts out of it.
Does it?
One of the.
It's interesting because when it first came out, I was doing trips, and I went to California and did a workshop for a group of Lutherans, and one Lutheran pastor said, "This is passé. We're way beyond this." And then I went to Western Pennsylvania and did it, and the bishop said, "This is so radical. This is dangerous." And do you know what he thought was dangerous? Another adaptation by the community that said, the Magnificat talks about Abraham and says nothing of Sarah. So the community said, if you're going to mention Abraham, you got to give Sarah some credit because he didn't give birth all by himself. And the bishop said, Sarah is the one who laughed at God. You can't, but those things pass. Yeah.
Well, why do you flat minor? Why do you flat minor?
Oh, yeah, I was waiting for that. E-flat sounds like evening to my ear. It's a soft key, it's a round key, it's warm. And with the incense psalm, I wanted to stay relative, and I thought I could do C minor, which is way too low, or I could go to E-flat minor. And what I tell people, I put it in E-flat minor because that is the right key. And in the ELW, it's D minor, and it sounds completely wrong to my ear. And then it shifts to B flat major, which is a settling in key for me. And the idea was the E flat key would sort of, as the lights go down, and then B flat was the key you go to sleep with, if you haven't gone to sleep already somewhere in there. And contrasting that, now the feast and celebration, Susan Brill and Dan Erlander and Susan's husband Martin commissioned that at PLU. And in the summer of 1990, I wrote a good part of that in the piano at Narnia. And that is in E major, which is a morning key. You can hear that, can't you? Yeah. Just go home and try playing Now the Feast in E flat, and it's just, Do you know what I mean? That keys in Indian music, they have all these rags and different keys, and they're associated with times of day and spiritual practice. Heather, yeah.
Well, just on that very subject, I had transposed it once, just so it was in the key that the voices began to sing, and it was a totally different.
What did you transpose?
The psalmody.
Oh, Psalm 141.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have never talked about this without some keyboard player complaining about E-flat minor. And no, I understand that. I had to practice, too. I mean, I've said most of what I can say in public about this. I won't even get into the paper bag Vespers. Yeah.
When will you introduce us to Vespers 12?
Oh, I never. No, it's funny. I'm writing less, and part of the reason is I think it is wise to say, this has been done, I've done this, somebody else should do this. When a 61-year-old man thinks that his music should be published so that somebody who's 25 or 30 isn't published, that's not good for the church. And besides, I'd rather play with my grandsons than write Vespers 12. And the truth is, I have progressed, I've evolved in my language. I wouldn't write this language today. I wrote this language for the 85, 86 community. And my own piety is different than this. Does that make sense? And it's interesting because a lot of people sing this who probably would disagree with a lot of the reasons why it got written, if you know what I mean about the language. Like Abba Imma, for instance. You'll notice in Vespers 86 it's Abba Imma, but my publisher wouldn't do that. So it's not Abba Imma in the GI version. And, you know, that was the community. And it brings back nice memories to sing it anywhere, but especially to sing it here and remember the people. Rolf Vegdahl, how many of you know Rolf? Yeah. In the published version, there's a harmony part on the Annunciation. It's not in here. And the reason it's not in here is after I wrote this, one night Rolf was playing guitar and said, I just want to sing harmony in this, and he made it up. But it never got in here, but it's in the published version. So that's one example of a specific person. And besides Elmer, who wasn't involved in this particular incident, there were three other pastors who counted up the number of times I said Jesus and counted up the number of times I said Christ and made a tally and brought it to me. So it was that kind of discussions. Imagine writing for a committee of people who are all over the map. Yeah. That's probably enough on that, isn't it? If you want to talk about it more, we can. But it's the reason I'm talking still is it's only 7:15. Okay. I remember I went to my first workshop and a liturgical workshop, and there was a famous composer, Alexander Pelequin, and he was giving a workshop on composing, and I was just starting. I thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to sit at the feet of the master, and I'm going to learn the craft of composing. And the entire workshop consisted of him saying, and then I wrote this, and he'd play it, and he wrote, and then I wrote this. And I thought, if I ever in that position, I'm not going to give a workshop about, and then I wrote this. Yeah.
What was your favorite piece? You said it wasn't your best. What do you think?
I don't have a favorite piece of mine. My favorite piece has probably Come My Way, My Truth, My Life, but I didn't write that. I don't know. It's sort of like saying, which of my grandsons do I like the best? And they're written for different reasons. I think writing liturgical music and writing liturgical texts are writing to a task. So you don't write, I feel like writing this, and so I'll write it. Tom, were you going to?
Could you talk about people tacking on a Eucharist?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple incidents. And Susan was present for this first one. We were doing a living liturgy in Oregon. And someone came up and I hope this person isn't in the room. But someone came up and very proudly told me that they liked holding evening prayer, but they didn't have a tradition of that. They did matins. So they had changed it to holding morning prayer. And everywhere it said evening, they had just simply put in morning. Stay with us now, for it is morning, and the day is just beginning. And Susan was surprised that I wasn't more upset. But Susan was talking about, I don't know if we talked about it this time. Oh, she talked about the time in Austin when we had all that latte. And it was because the campus pastor, was it Craig Johnson, Susan? Yeah, the campus pastor there invited us to write an evening communion service, and the reason was that people were tacking communion onto holy evening prayer and doing it in the evening. And so if you look at Unfailing Light, which Susan and I wrote together, like holy evening prayer, starts in E-flat, but it goes to C. But, I mean, it's similar in a lot of respects, and Susan wrote some beautiful text for the evening hymn. It looks like a hybrid between an evening office and a Eucharist. And see, if you start looking at Vespers, look at the classic form, and then try and imagine communion being jammed in it, it just seemed wrong to me. So that's how it got written, and it's called Unfailing Light, and it's in the bookstore. Yeah. Oh, and one more thing. The prayer that Ben prayed last night, the Great Thanksgiving, Susan wrote that, and it's in Unfailing Light as well as the ELW. Yeah.
So when you write both the text and the music, what comes first, or how do you...
Well, I try, more and more, I try not to write text. I have learned that it's best left to people who are good at it. And I think writing...
You did the text for this.
I did, yeah.
So,
I told you, though, I didn't think it was that great. I mean, you had to jam in the summer theme and
just... Did you do that before you did the music, or how did you...
In this case, they came together. In almost every case, the text comes first. Because if you write the music first, then the text has to bend to the tune, which is not good liturgy. The text should always speak, and the music should be a frame around it. But in this case, well, see, I don't even remember. And this was written over 3 months, and I'm sure this was about the fourth version, because the community was very gracious, but they were very direct about what they didn't like. So this, it did go through a lot of writing. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to, I don't want to embarrass you, but I wanted to...
Go ahead.
Thank you for fostering the community to create this.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I've been thanked so much by people. And one thing that is true, music doesn't exist unless it's being made by somebody. So what you take into your parish is a piece of paper with notes on it. And so the people you should thank are the ones who make it come alive in your communities for you. That's...
And I feel like this, work like this, really has inspired me to try my own hand at liturgical time.
You could do something at least this good, I'm sure. It's, you know, and I'm not being false modesty. This is... There's stuff of mine that I'm much prouder of that I'd love to show you, but this is, they always go, oh, I love even Holy Communion prayer. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Maybe it's because this is what I was exposed to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's probably because most of you have heard it so many times that you... Mm-hmm. It does point out the fact, though, that congregations, they're sort of, well, I was going to say they're like my grandson, but they're, you know, they're not quite like my grandson, but he loves to hear songs that he loves over and over again. And I think some of us who choose music think that novelty is what everybody wants, and I think they want things done well. I think we should take a short break. The choir's going to sing in a little bit. If I forget, this is side one during psalm, and this is side two, but I'll try and remember to tell you. And thank you for using it, and thanks for coming to hear about it. And I'm around till tomorrow afternoon if you have questions that are too inappropriate to ask in front of the group.